the reason I bring
tell
this
me
one up,
why
I,
in the hell you were picking Antonio Brown over Michael Gallup.
This is
why.
It's time to fade the chalk.
Fade the chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, Ebro, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. And today, we are going to discuss some decision points in upcoming drafts, giving you the players that we're choosing over others, playing a little this or that, rolling through a lot of these positions. Adam, are you ready for all this?
Yeah, man, I think this is like an ideal talking point, right? Because like we have our rankings up at ftnfantasy.com that you can check out, and like that'll help to start. But like you also want to have the reasons why we may have a certain player ranked a few spots ahead of another player, or why a certain player is that close to another player. And we kind of went through some of the players that are close in both kind of ADP and rankings for us. And we're going to get into it a little bit. I will say, I think we're going to have some, you and I are usually like pretty hand in hand with a lot of stuff, but we might disagree today, which is always fun.
Oh, there's no might. We're going to fight today. This is definitely going to be a fight. I'm ready. I've limbered up a little bit. Got my boxing gloves on. I think it's time to go, dude. So why don't you kick us off here and tell me why you hate Jalen Hurts.
That's a lie. So we're comparing Jalen Hurts and Russell Wilson, and they're very close for me. But I still, right now, have Russell Wilson a little bit higher. And it's more so holding out hope, right? It's me holding out hope that the Seattle Seahawks are just going to let Russ air it out. And I feel like this offseason there's been some rumors that they're just going to continue to be the same offense. But then there's also some rumors with the new coordinator, with Russ coming out and like saying some things that they might actually do that. And we saw the upside when they let him do that. The first half of the season, he was the unanimous MVP. He was like the number one quarterback in fantasy. Like we talked about it on the quarterback preview episode. If I knew Russell Wilson was going to throw the ball 40 times a game, he'd be right up there with Mahomes and those guys because he's that efficient. I mean, on a per drop back basis, he's great. And yeah, look, like Jalen Hurts, this is what, June 25th. These rankings are going to change, and we know the immense upside Jalen Hurts has both as a runner and as a passer. Like, We talked about it with John Daigle. The way they used Jalen Hurts last year in Philadelphia was wrong. They had him drop back, take five-step drop backs, and throw the ball deep down the field to receivers that weren't able to play well in that role. There was no Alshon Jeffrey for most of the year, and when he was back, with Alshon Jeffrey is like not even close to what he once was. It was DeSean Jackson for like maybe a game. I don't think he played with DeSean Jackson, so never mind. You add DeVonta Smith, who we're actually going to talk about a little bit later, so we talked about it. There's three, maybe four quarterbacks that have 4,000, 1,000 ceilings for passing and rushing. Jalen Hurts is one of them. So I think the reason I wanted to put these two in this conversation is because they're very close. Russell Wilson's kind of like the, okay, we've seen him do it every year. We know what he is. He's going to be really good. But Jalen Hurts is the, okay, we saw him for 3-4 games last year. He has top five upside, we saw clearly, and now he gets a full offseason and a full season as the starter. So I do think it's really close, and this could change any day now for me. But it's more so holding out hope that if Russell Wilson, again, I talked about it before in that MVP run in the beginning of the season, Seattle was among the league leaders in early passing downs and throwing the ball at one of the highest rates on first downs. Like, if only we could see that again, because DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett plus Gerald Everett, like that's an insane group of pass catchers, not to mention Chris Carson out of the backfield. So it's very close, but I'm still leaning Russell Wilson.
And see, I lean Jalen Hurts in this manner. And the reason I do is because I think
why do you hate Russell Wilson then?
Because Pete Carroll hates Russell Wilson. That's why.
Facts.
Dude, it's facts. Okay? Could Seattle unleash Russell Wilson? Yes. It's in the range of outcomes. That's, again, why I don't have Russell Wilson lower in my rankings. It's not because, okay, do I believe in his outlier touchdown production every year? Yes, we've seen it too many years in a row to sit here and fade that, okay? But I worry that Seattle is going to limit him enough to take away his absolute ceiling. The ceiling that we saw last year when they allowed him to throw the damn ball. And I don't think that that's the case for Jalen Hurts in Philly. And unlike everybody else in the stratosphere, I believe that Jalen Hurts is a better passer than everybody is giving him credit. I wrote this up at FTN Fantasy, and you need to go check out that article, why Jalen Hurts is a lockstep forget QB1 this year, and his ceiling is immense. Went through all these passing numbers. Just to give a small snippet of what he did at the collegiate level. One, he was a guy that showed that he improved every single season in his accuracy. 2019, his final year in college, he was a top 20 passer in adjusted completion percentage at all. Let me state that again. At all levels of the field. And you're talking about all these different sample sizes. Every one of these, 151 quarterbacks, 99 quarterbacks, 137 quarterbacks, at all three different slices of the field, short, intermediate, and deep, top 20 passer. So we're going to say after 1 year in a broken offense with terrible receivers to throw to, and he's got a new system this year, that Jalen Hurts could never be a better passer.
Yeah,
ever.
Like we don't have enough sample to know.
No.
At all.
But people are willing to do that, man. People are willing to sit here and dig the grave for him.
Yeah, and like the Dallas game, he was legitimately bad. Like, you watch that game, his reads were off. Like, he was throwing to double coverage. He was throwing late. Okay, the guy, you know, was sitting on the bench for the entire season. Like, we need to be careful with quarterbacks and evaluating them in a small sample because, again, it's I hate saying it because it's like the easy comparison, but like, nobody thought Josh Allen could throw the football. You know, like obviously from a mechanics and like arm talent, yes, but like accuracy wise, like. And now all of a sudden, Josh Allen is like, you know, top five in the league at throwing the football. Like, Jalen Hurts, we haven't seen enough sample to know, like, how good of a quarterback he can be. And I do agree with you. I think he, like, you look at the way they used him in Philadelphia. It was a bad situation. Not to mention the offensive line. Most combinations of different starting offensive lines in the NFL last year. You're going to get Brandon Brooks back, who's one of the best guards in the NFL. Like, they're going to be better in that regard. Devonta Smith's going to be that alpha they haven't had.
We're going to talk about him later.
Yeah, and like we know Jalen Hurts is going to run. That's going to be huge for him for fantasy. But like, I think he's also got, like you said, more of a ceiling as a passer. Like, he made some great throws. I think it was the game he came in relief of Wentz. The first time he came in, it was in the second half. I think it was. I want to say it was this. Was it the Saints game? I can't remember. But he made a throw. I think it was like an out route to one of the running backs out of the backfield. And it was a timing route. And like, it was a hell of a throw. Like, Jalen Hurts can throw the football. Like, I'm excited to watch him in a full season. And by the way, no, Joe Flacco is not taking his job. Let's stop.
No, they are going to give Jalen Hurts full run to establish himself as the answer at quarterback this year. And the other thing that people don't understand about Nick Sirianni and what he did at the Colts, and yes, I understand Frank Reich was also involved. Can we also talk about the Shane Steichen a little bit? Can we talk about the OC that helped Justin Herbert immensely just blow up last year? He's in-house, too, in Philly, and people are not discussing that, Adam. Like, how often have you heard that talked about this offseason? Tell me. Tell me how much you've heard that mentioned.
We haven't, just because the Eagles have been conducting their own rock, paper, scissor tournaments. Otherwise, we might have. And by the way, it was an Alshon Jeffrey touchdown pass from Jalen Hurts, but still, I remember the play. It was nice. But yeah, I mean, we haven't at all.
The thing is that this offensive system is going to change immensely. They are going to scheme up easy completions and short and intermediary passes. And if you look back at Jalen Hurts, his entire collegiate profile, he is a better short and intermediate passer than he is a deep passer. Mm-hmm. And last year, all they did was say, okay, Jalen, run around in circles and throw deep. Oh, wait, but your receivers are total dog shit. They can't get open deep. But throw deep. Please throw deep. Oh, they're still not open? Well, just keep trying. Keep trying, sir. This year, it's going to be very, very different for Jalen Hurts, that entire offense. And
everything was on the fly for them.
Yep.
And now they have an entire offseason knowing Jalen Hurts is their quarterback. And Devonta Smith, I mean, I don't want to talk too much about him because we're going to talk about him later, but just how he helps Jalen Hurts, like, he's just a guy that, like, what's a quarterback's best friend other than just having 7 seconds to throw the football? It's somebody that can separate at every level, and yeah. That's Devonta Smith.
I love Jalen Hurts this year. I get people if they want to have Russell Wilson over him. I understand it. I mean, that's a much higher floor option. Between this conversation between the two of us, I get that we differ on where we see the ceiling possibly being, and I get that. If you want to go the safer option of Russell Wilson, that's fine. But Jalen Hurts, I'm shooting for ceiling. I'm shooting for the moon. I think that he has the higher ceiling than Russell.
And I do agree. I 100% agree. And like they're literally like back to back for me. And like I said, this time next week, Jalen Hurts very well could be ahead of Russell Wilson. And by the way, we talk about just the way that like Jalen Hurts led the NFL in average up to target at quarterback last year, like 10.1. Like they're going to draw up some easier plays for him. That's going to help his completion percentage. So the excitement, totally understandable, Jalen Hurts. And look, I could easily switch these two around this time next week.
Well, so moving over from this quarterback debate to another one, and this is not because I hate him. It's just because I love this player more. Joe Burrow, I am definitively having him in my ranks over, and I will draft him ahead of Ryan Tannehill. And I understand everybody's in Ryan Tannehill love right now. I get it. Julio's in town. It's all butterflies and beautiful cupcakes.
They got Julio?
Dude, look, I get it. Everybody wants to talk about Tennessee right now. I am in on the Cincinnati passing attack. I think that the offensive line is going to be better enough to buy time for Joe Burrow. All of the camp videos look like he is firmly on track for week one. When he was under center last year, this team was top 3 in passing rate. They're going to be top 10 in pace. They are going to run a ton of plays, and it's going to be throwing the damn ball. So I understand his mobility is going to be cut down a little bit, but that's not what was helping you with Joe Burrow last year. He's also shown that he could be extremely accurate. The interceptions are not a problem. And we already mentioned here the upgrade that they got with Ja'Marr Chase as well coming into Cincinnati. That is going to be an immense upgrade in efficiency on a per-play basis over throwing balls to the corpse of A.J. Green. So for all these reasons, man, give me Joe Burrow over Ryan Tannehill. Now, push back here, Adam. Tell me how I'm wrong on this, please.
It's really comes down to the battle between efficiency and volume, right? Like, I don't think anybody is going, even with Julio being there, I don't think anybody's going into the season projecting Joe Burrow to throw the ball less than Ryan Tannehill. It's just, we've seen it. This is the identity of Mike Vrabel's team with Derrick Henry. They're going to run the ball as much as pretty much any team in the NFL. And look, I'll be honest. A couple years ago, I was like, don't draft Ryan Tannehill. He was hyper efficient. That's coming back down. And since he's taken over the starting quarterback job for the Titans, he's been continuously efficient as hell. I mean, number two in fantasy points per drop back since taking over for the Titans behind Lamar Jackson. He gives you rushing touchdowns. He gives you, you know, obviously the efficiency's just been there. Now you add one of the 5 best receivers ever. It's just hard not to like him. Joe Burrow, though, does have the volume up on his side. Before suffering that season-ending injury in Week 11, second in the NFL in pass attempts behind Tom Brady, he's on pace to, like, shatter a bunch of rookie quarterback records. Obviously, you add Ja'Marr Chase, who's one of the best receiver prospects, maybe since Julio Jones, right? And you add the fact that they already have T. Higgins, who's a stud, Tyler Boyd, who's a very good slot receiver. Like, it's great what he has there. I just think it's gotten to the point where, like, we just keep saying, okay, Tannehill's good, but whatever. But, like, we don't really appreciate how good he's been in this offense and this system. And, yes, I know Arthur Smith isn't there. We talked about this a lot. I just don't see how, with the success they've had offensively, that even with Arthur Smith not there, they keep Downing in-house. Like, I don't see Downing just coming in and saying, okay, we're changing it up, we're doing this, we're changing the entire philosophy of the offense. I just don't see it happening. So will they use maybe slightly less play action with Arthur Smith gone? Probably. Arthur Smith that's his thing, right? And we're going to see that in Atlanta. But I just think how good Tannehill's been is just kind of being overlooked. But this is another one. Like, if Joe Burrow throws the ball 600 plus times, he's going to, with the talent level around him and the talent level he is as a quarterback, like, yeah, I think both these guys can be top 10 easily, and I have them both right around there. I just still prefer Tannehill.
Yeah, and for me, look, I get the efficiency argument. I absolutely do. But
I know what this is about, by the way.
Oh, dear.
You're just mad about Anthony Firkser still. So you're just off the Titans.
Look, I am hurt by that, okay? Why the hell are you bringing that up right now? Like,
because you drafted Darnell Mooney.
Okay, I get it. The salt is real. It's okay. It's all right. It's okay. We press on, my friend. For me, I'm going to go with the volume over the efficiency, only because here's the thing. If the efficiency coalesces with that volume, his ceiling is higher than Tannehill's. With Tannehill, you're like, okay, he has to hit these efficiency marks.
Yeah, Tannehill's like the AFC Russell Wilson.
I mean, that's fair. But the point of it is like, with the volume that Burrow has, if he hits some outlier efficiency numbers, like a Ryan Tannehill season, with that type of volume, he's getting vaulted into the top five or six. Can we say the same for Ryan Tannehill, Adam?
I think we can.
I think the volume caps the ceiling, man. I don't think he has that type of ceiling. Like, you're talking like, okay, QB8, QB10, but does he have enough volume, even with the immense efficiency, could he, in your mind's eye, is it even in the range of outcomes for him to break into the top five, top six? Yeah. For me, I say with no.
I think he can.
Okay. I mean, I'm not there, but I get it. Moving over to the running back position, Nick Chubb or Jonathan Taylor, Adam, where are you going?
This one's interesting because I recently just moved Nick Chubb ahead of Jonathan Taylor. Ooh. I think Mike Tagliere from Fantasy Pros mentioned this like a while ago, and it's like, I think he tweeted, like, why take Jonathan Taylor in the first when you can take Nick Chubb in the second? And it makes sense if you think about it. They project very similarly. They're the lead back on a very good rushing offense, but the edge goes to Cleveland, obviously, because they have the best offensive line in the NFL. Their offense overall is better. So, and they have a better play. Well, I would say Frank Reich and Stefanski are pretty even in terms of play calling. They're both very good. They're both going to be limited as pass catchers. Yes, Jonathan Taylor was legitimately one of the most efficient pass catchers in the NFL last year. He was top five in both catch rate, yards per target. He was great. Nick Chubb, that's been the downside of his fantasy upside, but we saw, and you talked about it down the stretch, was cutting into Kareem Hunt's pass routes, was catching more passes down the stretch. Maybe that's a sign of things to come. I just think they are a lot closer than, like, I love Jonathan Taylor. I really do. I love him. But I don't know if he should be a consensus top six pick in fantasy after the year he had. Dynasty, no question. This is redraft. But, like, I just think they're way closer than the ADP and rankings have them. And we know Nick Chubb is going to be, you know, 4.5 yards a carry, a bunch of touchdowns, like a candidate to lead the NFL in rushing yards. It's a run first offense in Cleveland. Like, I don't know. I just think if you have Jonathan Taylor ahead of Nick Chubb, I totally get it. And most people probably do. I just want to give some more love to Chubb because I think it's way closer than the ADP suggests.
So, all right. I have both of these guys really, really close in my rankings. I'm going to say that. And again, like we talked about on previous episodes, and I discussed this over at FTN Fantasy, my schedule analysis article is up there. It's live. Go check that out. The Cleveland Browns have a ridiculous cakewalk run defense schedule this year, especially if you're looking at explosive run rates allowed. So I get the love for Nick Chubb. I really, really do. The thing about it is that I'm siding with Jonathan Taylor on this one, and I get where Tags is coming from. I get it. I do. But to me, that's not saying, okay, we should be drafting Nick Chubb over Jonathan Taylor. That's saying Nick Chubb is not getting enough love. He should be a back end of the first round pick. He really, really should. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm still on Jonathan Taylor over Nick Chubb because Jonathan Taylor has a higher pass catching ceiling than Nick Chubb has right now.
He does. I get that. Even with Naheem Hines there, he definitely does.
He does. And he has the same type of skill set, breakaway runs for days. The thing about it is that if I think that Jonathan Taylor can catch more passes, and we have talked about this all offseason, when he was running routes, he showed us that all of the questions that we had coming into the season about, okay, can he catch passes? Is he going to be any good at this? He should have, like, dispelled all of that out of people's minds.
Yeah, he was legitimately awesome. Like,
he was so damn good at it, Adam. And I talked about this on the Boom Bust Breakouts and Bet series with Brad. Go check that out for Indianapolis. Jonathan Taylor, over the back half of the season, after his breakout, ran more routes than Nyheim Hines. I know it's only one, so don't come at me in my mentions, okay? But it was still more. And that still shocked people because they're like, well, Nyheim Hines was running routes. I mean, he had more routes than Jonathan Taylor. And I'm like, well, he didn't, one. And number two, Nyheim Hines stayed in play because they moved him around the formation. They increased his snaps on the slot and outside. And if this year happens, man, like, look, if this year happens and we see the wide receivers actually stay healthy, like, oh my God, Michael Pittman and Paris Campbell stay healthy, who do you think is going to take the hit for running routes? Is it going to be Jonathan Taylor or is it going to be Nyheim Hines, Adam? Put you on the spot here. One of them has to take the hit. Who's falling on the sword?
Like, they obviously love both of them. Nyheim Hines is, you know, I still don't want to take Taylor's rookie season and say he's better as a pass catcher than Nyheim Hines. But after what Jonathan Taylor did down the stretch, it's hard to just envision a situation where it's like not playing him every down you can. I mean, he's, you know what I mean? Like, he's shown that he can be, you know, a Christian McCaffrey, not as good, but like in terms of workload, like he can handle that type of workload.
Okay. So my whole thing is that I think Nyheim Hines is the one that obviously takes the hit there. And if I think that's the case, and these other three wide receivers stay healthy and they're on the field, and Jonathan Taylor is the one that's running routes, and he cuts into these routes even more than what we saw down the back half of the season, Jonathan Taylor has a type of ceiling that even Nick Chubb, unless Nick Chubb runs for like a 2,000 yards or something absolutely ridiculous.
By the way,
or gets like 18 touchdowns.
I think he can rush for 2,000. It's so hard when we're doing this because there's an extra game, right? So, like, if Nick Chubb has, you know, 1,800 yards going into week 17, he's got a shot to get to 2,000. You know what I mean? So it's, but like, even in the 16 game season, right? Like, there's probably two players you think can rush for 2,000 yards. One's the obvious one, Derrick Henry. I think the other one is Nick Chubb. Just they have the most unstoppable offensive line. They will just, even if they have a couple injuries here and there, they're just so well constructed. So, I just know the efficiency is going to be there for Chubb. If he somehow can catch like 35 passes, I mean, it's kind of similar to Derrick Henry, but like, it was not easy moving Chubb ahead of Taylor. I have them back to back. I think you can feel great about either one, but yeah, maybe it's more so like, you know, Chubb should be closer to like where Cam Akers is going. Most people probably have Cam Akers as a back end of the first round and Nick Chubb in early second. Maybe Chubb should be right there with Akers, but I actually have him ahead of Taylor, right there with Taylor too. So
what if I told you over the back half of the season, after we saw Jonathan Taylor just manhandling defenses, and I understand people are going to say, but the schedule,
don't care. That doesn't matter to me.
I don't care about that.
Especially with Jonathan Taylor, because the concern with him when he was underwhelming the first half was the game was like not slowing down for him. He was missing holes, stuff like that. Like, yes, he was facing some bad run defenses down the stretch, but he looked better. He looked more confident as a runner. Like, that's what matters to me. And again, we talked about the coaches. They're not going to be like with Dave Montgomery. It's like, you know, he really came on down the stretch, but he played Atlanta and Houston and all these bad defenses. So let's go back to, you know, splitting carries with Jordan Wilkins. Like they don't care.
No. And so even if I take out Jonathan Taylor's blow up game or he like just crushed Jacksonville in every sense of the form fashion for 250 plus rushing yards, even if you take that out, Adam, weeks 11 through 16, over 17 games, the dude was on pace for almost 1,700 rushing yards, man. 1,700. Like, and that's not even talking about what, like, if you pace him out with that last week, in week 17, hell, even if you cut that in half, Jonathan Taylor was on a ridiculous stratosphere. He was in a totally different area code. Like, we're talking about running backs that could run for 2,000 yards this year. I think it's a little bit egregious that we're not discussing Jonathan Taylor having that in his possibilities.
That's like, fair. Honestly. And we haven't discussed Marlon Mack because we both agree that Marlon Mack's not going to play a huge role, nope. Especially coming with the torn Achilles. It's tough because I love both of them, but and you're Taylor over Nick Chubb in any format, right? No PPR, half PPR, full PPR.
I mean, right now I am, and I will say this: they are both I have both of them ranked aggressively, even Nick Chubb.
Yeah, they're very similar.
There are people in this world that have Nick Chubb as a back end RB1. There are people in this world that have Nick Chubb outside the top 12. Which I don't even understand how you rank him that way. I don't get it. I don't understand it. And people say, well, his pass game role. And I'm like, you need to go back to the drawing board, man, and look at like what Nick Chubb has done over his entire career, both efficiency, and look at how this defense stacks up and this offensive line stacks up. If you do not have Nick Chubb as a top 12 running back, I seriously question what you're looking at. So moving over to another running back situation, Adam, I can't, man. I you're gonna have to kick this off and start this off with a why and how, because this I'm one staring is me, at this and I don't get it.
This one is me making an argument, and I don't feel confident about it. Michael Carter and Ronald Jones both are in situations where they're not gonna be the lead back, at least to start. We definitely know Ronald Jones won't be. I don't think Michael Carter will either. Tevin Coleman's there. They have Ty Johnson. They have four running backs that they're comfortable with. It just depends on what the new regime and coaching staff wants to do. And obviously, Michael Carter, the draft capital wasn't as high as we thought it might be. What was it, fourth round? But for me, like, you have a running back that's not the lead back. For me, it just comes down to I still believe in Ronald Jones. I think deep down Bruce Arians does too. I don't care. Bruce Arians is one of the three coaches where in fantasy, if he says something, you don't really take it for what it is. You just say, okay, cool. Like Pete Carroll is one of those guys too. So like how many times last year did he say, Ronald Jones, we still believe him. He's going to get the work. And then it was Leonard Fournette. And it was mainly just because of the worries we had about Ronald Jones coming in, right? It was pass protection, fumbles, and receptions. And he struggled with drops. Fournette did too, but in the playoffs and down the stretch, he shored that up, and that's why he played more. But Ronald Jones, man, like on a per rush basis, he was good, man. I mean, 5 yards a carry, third in the NFL in yards after contact per attempt behind Chubb and Derrick Henry. So that's elite company to be in. He's been very good as a breakaway runner, had the 98 yard touchdown. Like he's shown serious signs of upside. And for me, I understand Michael Carter has a much better chance of being the lead back for the offense, which is more enticing. But Ronald Jones is simply in the better offense. So I'll make the case for Ronald Jones. I feel myself getting sick as I do it because it's Bruce Arians and it's Ronald Jones. I still believe there's a lot of talent there, though. And I know they had Giovanni Bernard, and that's like the worst, most uninspiring backfield in fantasy. And Leonard Fournette's coming off and off a postseason where he was not just good, he was pretty instrumental to their success. So that obviously isn't appealing, but I think Ronald Jones has more, if not similar upside as Michael Carter. And like we saw when Fournette was out, Ronald Jones was like a set it and forget it top 12 running back every week. And I'm not saying you can project injuries. Obviously, you shouldn't do that when drafting, but I'm still very intrigued by the upside of Ronald Jones. So I'm probably an idiot, but there you have it.
No, I'm sorry. Like and I know that
to make this Carter versus Kenneth Gainwell, but for some reason, NFL teams didn't draft him until the sixth round, which I still think is egregious. So we can't do that.
No, we can't do that. And before I lead this off, I know that somewhere his ears, his brain,
Pat,
somewhere Patrick Crane is feeling this. Okay. I know he's got his hand
we
in the dirt.
Got Pat on so I can have 2-1 advantage. That's on me to not invite Pat on as soon
that's
as I
fair.
Saw we were talking
that's
about
fair.
Ronald Jones.
And I'll you know what? I'll take you both on. Let's go. Oh,
let me phone a friend. I'm going to call him right now.
Don't Shannon Sharp that guy. Don't do that. Man, I am on Michael Carter's the bandwagon, the hype train. I'm here for it. He's still going way too late considering what I think his upside is in drafts right now. And I think that people are sleeping on how good of a fit this is. Is the New York Jets offense going to be immensely explosive? No, not considering what Tampa Bay is going to look like, okay? But Tampa Bay is going to be passing the ball a ton. You're looking at Ronald Jones. There are still other people that he's competing in that backfield with. And I understand that's the conversation against Michael Carter. Everything coming out of Jets camp right now is talking about how much they love Michael Carter, how Michael Carter is already working with the ones. And I'm not just diving into the coach speak. This fit for Michael Carter is stupidly good, man. And people are not giving enough credence to, okay, the Jets have been rumored to possibly be in terms going to sign Moses and add him to the offensive line. If that happens, oh my Lord, the Jets offensive line could be a top five. And I'm not being hyperbolic in saying this, Adam. They could be a top five run blocking offensive line this year. Because if you look at all the parts or pieces,
Mekhi's got to stay healthy. He's got to.
And I'm not assuming injuries here.
Right, of course.
But you look at their offensive line. They are so well set up to be a zone blocking scheme offensive line and do the things that I think LaFleur wants to do. Mm-hmm. You look at, if they add Moses, they will have four projected starting off. And this is not even talking about Elijah Vera Tucker. Four projected starting offensive linemen. That amongst all offensive linemen, over 200 guys that finished inside the top 55 in zone run blocking grades last season. Four. Not even talking about Vera Tucker. They are going to be so damn good at run blocking, it's going to be crazy. You marry that with an offensive system that if LaFleur carries over any of these things from San Francisco, is going to be near the top. Not saying top five. Top 10, top 12 in rushing attempts this year. Michael Carter has 98th percentile agility. He has the skill set to eviscerate opponents in this run blocking scheme. Looking at all these parts or pieces, I love Michael Carter for this year. Absolutely love him. And even if he's in a committee, you're talking about the same thing for Ronald Jones. Like, Lombardi Lenny's not going away. Geo is not going away. Ronald Jones is not going to run routes. He can't catch passes. We've seen his stone hands over too many seasons to believe that now is the time where he's going to get stick 'em gloves. Carter, we saw at college, can catch.
He's definitely not catching passes. Like, that's a given. But like, if they're both in committees,
I think Michael Carter has a ceiling that Ronald Jones does not.
If they're both in committees, I'll take the running back in a committee in one of the league's best offenses. That's kind of what it comes down to me. But like, yeah, I liked Michael Carter a lot coming out of college too. It's just, it really bothered me with this draft class because I want to compare a lot of these other running backs, right? I want to compare Gainwell and Carter, but like the draft capital on these running backs outside of the top three was super underwhelming. And we kind of expected that going in, but I didn't think it would be that bad. I didn't think Kenneth Gainwell would be a sixth-round pick.
So, let me play devil's advocate here for a second, okay? With Michael Carter, why are we hurting him so much on the draft capital? Can we talk about that for a second?
It's not so much Carter.
Hold on. I get it's fourth round. But we're talking about a team that it has people at the top that just came from a situation where What draft capital was tied to Raheem Mostert? What draft undrafted. Capital was tied to Jeff Wilson?
Undrafted.
What draft capital was tied to, even when they signed Jerick McKinnon?
Mm-hmm.
Tevin Coleman. All these different players.
Yeah, it's a good point.
So,
very good point.
We're talking about a team that has showed, like, or at least player coaches that have shown at various stops where they're saying, okay, we're going to let undrafted guys ball out. We're going to give them opportunities to run. And this team that has shown you, or these head coaches, let me verify that. These quantify that better. These head coaches and this personnel, the staff, has shown that they're willing to sit here and let these guys that are UDFAs run away with backfields and volume. And now we're saying, but the fourth round was not high enough for us to really believe in Michael Carter. Shouldn't we be putting better context on saying that, like, wow, this is fourth round versus an entire backfield of guys that are UDFAs, cast-offs, sign-offs, like guys that were added off the streets in no-name contracts. So fourth-round capital, should that weigh more than what we're giving it or the public is giving credence to and what we saw in San Francisco? Should that count heavier than what it's being discussed as, Adam?
No, I think it's a very good point. It's not even like it's just one or two, like it's multiple examples of them giving opportunities and giving a ton of meaningful touches to running backs with, I mean, we're not even talking about running backs that were drafted at all. You know, it was Mostert was a UDFA. Wilson was a UDFA. Like, so fourth round, yeah, I was just more talking about the running back position as a whole. I was just kind of tilting about how underwhelming the draft class was for like rookie drafts and stuff like that. But yeah, Michael Carter, I mean, if there was anybody outside of what, Sermon and the top three, and maybe he might have a better chance than Sermon to be a 15 per game touch running back. It's got to be Michael Carter.
I'm in on the Michael Carter hype, man. I think that his fit and his ceiling and what he could do in his rookie season, it's all firmly in place, man. Moving over to the wide receiver position, man, you know what? I, looking at this, you're giving me all kinds of shit about loving the Rams this year and how that's my team. Have you ordered a Tampa Bay Buccaneers jersey yet? Have you
Absolutely
done that?
Not. Absolutely not.
You're not doing that? No? No t-shirt, no onesie, no little snuggie for you to, like, you know, cuddle up at night in?
Nah. No. No? No, no, no. But, no, the reason I bring
tell
this
me
up,
why
I,
in the hell you were picking Antonio Brown over Michael Gallup.
This is...
Why?
Why not? I think this is a really good one, right? You have
tell
the...
Me why for? I don't get it.
You have the quote-unquote... You have the wide receiver three on both teams, right? At least going into the season. On a top five passing offense. On a top five overall offense. Antonio Brown last year was quietly really good. So made his debut for Tampa Bay in week 9. And then he played in the playoffs. So counting all the games, the regular season games plus the playoffs, he had 11 games played, averaged, let's see. Oh, actually, not counting the playoffs, you look at his numbers. So from week 9 on to the end of the season, averaged 7.7 targets per game, 5.6 receptions per game, wide receiver 21 in fantasy, and then you count all 11 games, including the playoffs, he finished with 53 catches for 564 yards and 6 touchdowns. Yes, he had the huge blow-up game in week 17 against Atlanta. Mike Evans left early, but still, he was incredible in that game. The difference I see between these two is I think Tampa Bay, as soon as they brought in Antonio Brown, well, I don't think, the numbers show you this, they were drawing up plays for him. 30.6% of his targets came off screens last year, the 8th highest mark in the NFL. 19 receptions he had off screens, 3rd most in the NFL. They're drawing plays up for him. He's not just like, it wasn't just, oh, Mike Evans is the first read, he's not open, then Godwin, he's not open, and then we'll throw to Antonio Brown. Brady and AB have a connection. This is an offense that can clearly support multiple receivers. Dallas can too, don't get me wrong. I just think AB has a higher floor, and I think the ceiling's close. I know Gallup in this, I know you love Dallas's offense, and you should. I mean, it's going to be an elite offense for fantasy. We're going to love them. But Michael Gallup, and there's been talks about him moving around the slot a little bit more in minicamp right now, which could help him. But last year, second among all receivers in routes run, but he was the wide receiver 38. And yes, I get it. Dak got hurt, and it killed the entire offense. But he actually averaged more targets per game without Dak Prescott, which was interesting. Andy Dalton was throwing to him a lot more than like CeeDee Lamb. And that's not to say that Dak's going to go, but I'm not, we can't project Dak to, or we can't project Gallup to have more targets than Cooper and Lamb and Zeke still there. Like the difference I have is I think Antonio Brown is more of a focal point than Michael Gallup is. And they're both the wide receiver threes for their team anyway. So give me the guy that's getting, you know, targets generated for him. Whereas Michael Gallup, as we've seen, and that could change this year. And I still think there's immense upside. But we see Michael Gallup be the guy that they take shots down the field with, whereas Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb are going to be the guys that are getting the more consistent targets. So it's interesting. And it's not that I love the Bucs. I have been warming up to Antonio Brown in fantasy. I just thought when you wanted to bring up Gallup, that it was a perfect situation to break up Antonio Brown because they're both very comparable with their roles, situations, and teams and stuff like that.
Google's Tampa Bay onesie.
Listen, as a Bills fan, you Adam won't get me to Pfeiffer. Support any team Brady's on, ever. He's the GOAT, but I can't. He's caused me too much pain, so you can stop right there.
Okay, so here's the pushback on Antonio Brown. Everybody that's citing his points per game is, and you talked about it, you mentioned it, week 17, is immensely skewing all of that. Just for the people at home, if they're not willing to pull up the box scores, week 17, 15 targets, 11 receptions, 138 yards, and 2 tutties. Before that week, so weeks when he was on the Bucs, Antonio Brown, weeks 9 through 16, was the wide receiver 41, Adam.
And guess now, what? I have we him put at in week 17. 41.
We put him in week 17. Now everybody's like, oh, but he was the wide receiver 22. That 1 week faulted him from the wide receiver 41 to the wide receiver 22, and it's false signal. You talk about all the screen yards and stuff. I mean, dude, that's exactly why I don't want Antonio Brown. You look at his ADOT over that stretch. Mike Evans, 12.6. Chris Godwin, 10.6. Antonio Brown, 8.8. Target share. Mike Evans still owned it. He had a higher target share than Antonio Brown. 22% to Antonio Brown, 17.7. He still didn't own the red zone. That was Mike Evans. Chris Godwin got more red zone targets. Like, I'm not in on Antonio Brown because I think that, yes, I think that he's going to be used. If you want to go that route as a PPR floor option, I get it late in drafts. But I don't see the ceiling with him. And in Michael Gallup, I absolutely do. Dallas is going to be a top three passing rate pace team. Michael Gallup owns the deep role in this offense. Yes, I understand Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb are going to eat. Dak Prescott is still going to take shots and be a damn good when he does it down the field. Offensive line's going to be better. They're going to keep him upright. If we go back to 2019, Michael Gallup was the wide receiver 18 in fantasy points per game. And I understand CeeDee Lamb was not there.
I was going to say, I really don't care.
The other part of that is he can revisit being a top 24 wide receiver this year. Because Dallas is going to run so many damn plays, it's going to be ridiculous. You're talking about wide receiver 3 volume or the wide receiver 3 spot on this team. Dallas is going to run, and they could shatter play records this year, Adam. Shatter them, considering what they showed us last year. Tampa Bay is going to run a lot of plays, but they're not going to even sniff, even get close to as many as Dallas is going to run. And I think Dallas is probably going to be top 2, top 3 in passing rate. Can Tampa be up there? Yes. But I'm not willing to buy in on Antonio Brown. One, past the age apex curve. Two, he's getting nothing but short area targets. Three, I worry about him owning the red zone role. Gallup is going to have the deep targets. Those are the money targets we want to have in fantasy. Give me Michael Gallup easily, handedly over Antonio Brown.
You're not very nice.
I told you we were going to fight about this stuff, dude.
No, these are fun because we agree on a lot of stuff. Like it's probably why we snipe each other a lot in these drafts we do. Like, so it's nice to kind of, you know, go through some different thinking points. And it's not like all these debates we've had. It's not like it's one for me where I'm like, you're crazy for having, like, they're all close.
No,
that's why we wrote these down, because to us and to most of the ADPs out there, like, they're all close, including this last one.
Well, and I love this episode, especially because now I know what to get you for Christmas. I mean, it's, you know, Christmas can come in July, but I know what I'm definitively ordering in December. I mean, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when, sir.
I mean, I will happily take a Nick Chubb jersey, if that's where you're getting
at. Nope, not it. Nope.
Okay,
you're
fine.
Something with red and black on it.
Okay, I have no problem. I have no problem with a Russell Wilson jersey.
Oh my gosh, should I give you a Tom Brady Tampa jersey?
I mean, he's still the GOAT, so that'd be a great gift. As much as I hate facing him when he was a Patriot, he's still the GOAT. Like, that would not be a bad gift. You could get way worse gifts for me than that.
Oh.
Than a jersey of the greatest quarterback of all time.
Oh, the
sign
gears
me up.
Are turning.
Go ahead.
Trust me, there's going to be something. Something's in the works here. All right, man. Last wide receiver debate to sit here and close out this podcast. Devonta Smith or Brandon Ayuk? And I know, look, we're actually going to agree on this one, my friend. Look, consensus and everybody is out in the streets talking about, oh, I love Brandon Ayuk. Why are you with me on this? Why are we going Slim Reaper over Ayuk here?
Targets. And I understand yes. Brandon Ayuk's target share and everything, especially down the stretch. He was getting double-digit targets pretty much in every game. George Kittle is going to be healthy this year. Deebo Samuel is hopefully going to be healthy this year. And who knows what the quarterback situation is going to be different no matter what, because Garoppolo is going to be healthy or it's going to be Trey Lance. If Trey Lance is under center, maybe even fewer passing attempts because he's going to run way more than Jimmy Garoppolo ever has and ever will. So that will change the dynamic of the offense. We talked about it. Like, we both are in agreement that Brandon Ayuk, as talented as of a player as he is, a little bit overrated right now in fantasy just because we're drafting him based off last year's finish, but we're not taking into account with his ADP why he finished that way. And it's not because he's not talented. He's immensely talented and he fits this offense extremely well. I remember when he got drafted, he was the top receiver. It was like him and CeeDee Lamb in yards after catch in the nation. And he joins this team, which is predicated off yards after the catch. So I absolutely love the fit. For me, though, it's just George Kittle is going to be back and play more than 8 games, hopefully. And if that's the case, Ayuk's already losing targets. And then if Debo's there, they manufacture touches and targets for Debo on the little quick passes, the shovel passes, screens. Like, Debo is, you know, for me, like, I prefer Debo at his ADP than Ayuk at his. And Devontae Smith's going right around Brandon Ayuk. And I think we're severely underrating the fact that Devonta Smith could lead all rookies in targets this year, even ahead of Jamar Chase. It wouldn't shock me. We didn't even talk about this with Hurts. Like, I think the Eagles throw the ball a little bit more than people think this year, too. And Devonta Smith, like, yes, was he my wide receiver 3 in this draft class behind Chase and Bateman? Sure. But that was more so me just being in love with Rashad Bateman during the draft process than having anything against Devonta Smith. He's going to get open against anyone. Press coverage, it hasn't mattered about his size. He gets open against press coverage. You know, he makes catches in traffic, deep down the field. Like, I just think there's a chance that these guys both see similar targets. And for me, I'll take the guy that's going to be, what, the 1A at worst with Dallas Goedert in their offense? You know, so, you know, give me Devonta Smith. But it's close. But we're not as high in Brandon Ayuk as everyone else seems to be.
No, man, because you laid it all out perfectly, man. And the other thing is we've seen this play out, Adam. Like, when Debo was healthy and George Kittle were healthy, a very, very small sample, Debo and George Kittle both had a higher target share than Brandon Ayuk. People are like, oh, well, I love Ayuk. It's like that perfect storm of, like, everybody else being, like, injured on the damn team is not coming back. And if you're projecting that, what the hell are you looking at? Like,
that's the thing.
It had to have been something.
That was just a year, one of those years for San Francisco, because it wasn't just Kittle and the receivers. Their entire team was hurt. Garoppolo was hurt. Their entire defensive line was hurt. Like, it was their second. It was insane how unfortunate they were with injuries. Like, it was to the point where it's like, that's not happening again. Like, at all.
It's ridiculous, man. Devonta Smith has a higher target share possibilities than Brandon Ayuk. You're looking at, like, who's he fighting for targets? Travis Fulgham, Dallas Goedert,
Travis Fulgham,
Jalen Reagor. Like, these are the people that he's fighting for targets for? Like, he could be their alpha from week one, and we can't say that about Brandon Ayuk. I understand that everybody gets... Tell me about this, Adam. How much bad analysis do you see on a yearly basis by people getting married to last year's results, not putting context to it, and projecting that forward for the next year and being like, I love this player so much, and like not putting any context of like all the other parts and pieces and things that happened?
That's literally the argument I have every day about Zeke, why I have him where I have him ranked. It's like, yes. Oh, but did you see where he finished? I don't care. Did you see the circumstances last year? Like, we can't, if you look at just raw fantasy finishes among positions, you're doing yourself a disservice because there's so many circumstances that go involved, like Brandon Ayuk's. Yes, fits the offense well, immensely talented player, loved the fit. He was getting, like, I'm going to pull it up right now. I'm pretty sure he got double-digit targets in, like, a handful of his final games, and the number two receiver on that team during that time was, what, Kendrick Bourne? Like, of course he's going to get the ball. And the running backs were all hurt too. Let's not even talk about that. Their entire backfield was hurt. Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, look at these targets the last, from week 10 on, they had their bye in week 11, then Ayuk missed week 12. So it was 14, then the bye, then he missed a game. Then it was 9, 16, 13. And I believe he got hurt the Arizona game, then missed week 17. So
I'm in for it, man. I'm in for Devonta Smith over Brandon Ayuk. I think that his ceiling, the floors are similar, but the ceiling is absolutely with Devonta this year. If we think that he is going to be the type of transcendent talent that we saw at Alabama, he could absolutely just grab even higher of a target share than even what we're projecting in this episode, man. So look, everyone, that is our this or that. These are the decision points and drafts you're going to face in best ball, in fantasy leagues coming up this year. So choose wisely, pick very conservatively. If you're with Adam, you're all things Tampa. I get it. I can't go there. But Adam and I are going to be back next week getting you ready for week one, getting you ready for all your best ball drafts in the weeks to come. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.